Log Talk Radio.
Do you miss me when you kiss him? Do you wonder all the things that might have been if we'd held on one more summer? Could have spent a long cold winter staying in.
August 22nd, 2015. Our special guests tonight are Jenna Blake and Sam Sobelman from the band Valley Shine. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Good to
Thank
be
you.
Here.
It's great to have you. I really like that song, and I want to hear more music from you guys, and I want to hear, that's one of the things with me. I'm kind of a, well, I am a music junkie, there's no doubt about that, and been doing
worst thing to be hooked on.
Yeah, it's a pretty good thing to be hooked on. I would agree with that, Sam. And I wanted the people to when they, one of the things that happens with this show, this is going in my eighth year with this, and the podcast gets a lot of hits, and people hear music all the time, and they hear a lot of music. And one of the things, the reason, guys, I started doing this so that people could get to know the musicians and the people behind the music. And it happened to me when, you know, I was walking the dogs once, and I heard an interview with, gosh, I can't remember who it was, but they were interviewing Meatloaf, and this is some years ago, and I didn't even like his music. And I heard the interview, and I thought, you know, I'm going to give his music a second chance, because I got to know him a little bit more through the interview and got to know what he was going through as a musician, as a person. And I thought, you know, if I could just do that a little bit with music, That would be pretty cool. And so that's what I've been doing, and that's what I'd like to do today. So first of all, thanks, guys, for joining.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. And one of the things I'd like to do is for you guys to just talk about, you know, yourselves and how you got started with music and the career of music, because it's a wonderful thing, but it's not an easy thing. And it's one of those things where if you do something you love, it's just awesome. But it's also, you know, there's a lot going on in the music industry today, and we always like to talk about that. So if you'd like to, why don't we start with Jenna? And Jenna, how did you get started with music? Did you grow up in a musical family? I mean, what part in your life did music start having a big impact on you?
You know, I actually didn't grow up in a musical family. I wish I had. Not in my immediate family, but I found out later that my grandpa was actually a musician. By the time that I was born, he'd had a stroke, so he wasn't playing anymore. But I do remember when I was young, going to watch my uncle. We would travel to Ohio to watch him play in this fantastic bluegrass band. I was probably about 5 or 6 years old, you know, and I remember just being in awe of that style of music and just watching my uncle play. And he played mandolin and banjo. And I think that's probably one of my first memories of just really thinking, wow, this is so interesting to me and so exciting, and I wonder what it's all about kind of thing, you know, watching them just dive on stage together like that, and how intricate the parts were that they would play. I just thought it was so neat.
What do you think about bluegrass, Jenna? Why do you think, because I agree with you on that. There's something about bluegrass music that is special. What do you think it was?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm from Kentucky, so I think it's probably just born in me that I just love that, the quick movements of the picking of the banjo and the, you know, I guess bluegrass music to me, whenever I watch it, I think those musicians just really dial in. And it's just impressive to me the way that bluegrass musicians play together. And again, like the intricate parts of each instrument, it's just very impressive to me. So I think maybe a little bit of that mixed with the fact that it's just my good old Southern roots, and they just love a good bluegrass song, you know.
Who doesn't?
Bluegrass is great. But I actually didn't end up playing bluegrass or anything like that when I was young. I wanted to learn piano. It was just something I wanted to do, but I didn't actually take my first piano lesson until I was in high school, surprisingly. I started taking lessons from one of my girlfriends in high school. I had told her, I really want to play piano, but I don't know. And she said, well, my grandma teaches. I was like, oh, okay, great. And so I'll never forget one of my first lessons. I just went over to her house, and she was a little bit off her rocker. She was a little crazy. And she was
That's the best kind.
Billy Nelson. I know, right? I will never forget these moments of going over, and it always smelled like cigarettes in her house, and there were pictures of Willie Nelson everywhere. And I'm telling you, our lessons were generally about 90% talking about Willie Nelson and 10% piano lessons.
Oh, that's amazing.
But, yeah, I loved every minute of it. And long story short, I ended up going to a performing arts school in New York and taking voice lessons. And I did, you know, musical theater all through high school, and ended up taking some piano and guitar and you know, music theory classes in college, and just basically from there played every day and wanted to teach myself and grow as a musician. And somehow I found myself now pursuing it here at my ripe age of 29. So it's been a long road, but really enjoyable watching myself grow as a musician and learn, and starting off with my lessons with my crazy, you know, grandma teaching me and learning a lot about Willie Nelson at the same time.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to one day, Jenna, write a book about people that have had the different types of piano teachers they've had, because it's really an amazing thing. I mean, I can remember actually I was in bands growing up, rock bands and stuff like that, and nothing super serious, but, you know, garage bands, and had a good time. And my buddy that was in a band, his sister was a piano teacher, and she was really good and serious, but I was anything but serious, and I thought she was, you know, kind of cute, and that's all I could think about. And it was, and I think about, wow, you know, I'm sitting there with the piano, but it's like that takes a little concentration, and you know, you were talking about that. And today, I have another radio show, and I was listening to they played a podcast of that today, and I listened to it, and it was about this guy who his first piano teacher, he said, was Russian, and she didn't speak any English. And so he would go to think about that, you know, piano lessons.
Yeah, I mean,
didn't speak English. And I thought, how did that go? And he goes, well, it didn't work out too good. And I thought, you know, that's just so awesome, though. But it's really interesting how that, you know, I always go back to that, the roots of it and the desire, because, you know, some people, you know, I know some people that their parents said, you're going to take piano lessons and this is it. And, you know, there's no in or out, you're doing it. And they did it, and, you know, and they became pretty good at it. But I always very interested in, you know, the story behind the musician about, you know, growing up. And you said you went to Ohio and listened to the bluegrass band, and how that affected you, and how that, like, you know, sparked something within you. And, I think that's one of the keys. You know, maybe you know, musicians can change the world, because I didn't used to think so, but I kind of think so. And I think if we can, you know, there's a lot of trouble and problems going on in the world, but if we can get kids to, you know, to buy into, you know, into music and art, and just, you know, find that magic and that confidence. Do you remember?
Absolutely.
Yeah, isn't that something? I mean, Jenna, think about when you were growing up. When was it that you thought, yeah, that's, I think I would really like to do that? I mean, you put a lot of work into it, going to school and stuff, but you had to have that love of music as a foundation.
Absolutely, and I remember feeling it and thinking that when I was young. And now, actually, that you bring it up, I do remember, I thought about it so much that one of my uncles for Christmas gave me an old keyboard, this old dilapidated Casio keyboard that he was getting rid of, and I was just thrilled that I got this keyboard. And I'd never taken a lesson before, but I kind of started trying to teach myself, and it was like, you know, my parents got me all this shiny new, like, probably bicycle and new stuff, and the only thing I cared about that Christmas was this dusty old Casio keyboard that I got.
Yeah, and
so I guess, yeah, I mean, there must have been that desire there from a young age that, and looking back, I wish more than anything I had been forced into some classical training. But, you know, this is just my path, and I still found my way to it in a different way. And I guess that's really all that matters.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think everybody has their own path to take, and I think sometimes it's, you know, it's interesting to see that. And we're going to talk a little later in the show about the songwriting part, because you're both songwriters, and to me that's one of the most interesting things in all the interviews I've done, is the approach and the path that songwriters take. Now, let's yeah, turn the page a little bit, and let's go back in time in our time machine. And Sam, take us back to when you were growing up and how music played a part in your youth.
Yeah, sure. I mean, my family is fairly musical. My oldest brother plays horns, and another brother plays piano professionally, and everyone has sort of been involved in theater and musicals and that kind of thing since I was, you know, in diapers. And it's just always been present. There's been lots of instruments in my house all the time, and I got sent to piano lessons at a very young age. Just, you know, stopped me from playing video games all the time.
Yeah.
And it worked. I liked it. and then eventually wanted to, you know, do other things and try learning other instruments, to, you know, impress girls, because, you know, piano wasn't cool enough, you know, up in Northern California, you got to play guitar to meet ladies. And that didn't work, but at least I got good at guitar.
That's funny. Yeah, that seems to be the thing, you know, it's like when I look back at, you know, me sitting there trying to concentrate on my piano lessons, and my mind was about as far away as that as you could get it. But it's
exactly.
Cool that you liked it and you connected with it. Now, when you started reading music at a young age, is that correct?
Yeah, I think I started taking lessons when I was about 8-ish. Did a very, very sort of traditional piano lessons, like doing the sheet music and learning theory that way. And then threw all that out the window and started writing songs.
Yeah, I was going to connect those two, but okay, take us through a little bit about, you know, your, like when you're in school and were you in bands and how did you start to exercise your talent as a musician?
When in high school, it was all about, you know, punk music, simple chords full of angst and emotion, you know?
Yep.
And then I went to college and actually I studied science and really didn't have much time for music during those years until I was almost graduating. At which time I got really into electronic music and tried to, you know, explore the different kind of sounds you could make with computers and technology. And that actually ended up being kind of a problem for me because you have this almost infinite, you know, and it's kind of crippling when you, like, could just go over and over and say, well, can this sound like this? Can it sound like this? Can it sound like that? And it got really hard for me to actually write songs anymore. And so after that is when I sort of came back to guitar and folk-type music with simpler instrumentation that sort of inspired more creativity by being a little bit more limited in scope. And that's sort of what I like about what we're doing now is that we have, you know, we're not just a guitar and vocals band, but we're also not this, you know, ethereal band with an infinite number of sounds. And it, yeah, that works for me.
So you don't use a lot of pedals?
just a few. Just yep. To give a nice, you know, nice little bit of delay and make it a little ring out real pretty.
Yeah, I think that you made some great points and points I'd like to talk about because, you know, listening to your music and, you know, I think you guys are really involved in, you know, roots music and music like we talk bluegrass and all the different things. And I love talking American roots music and we've, you know, sometimes I'll go on these tangents where I'll do interviews with just people that were, you know, blues or bluegrass or country music or different things. And all I'm doing is trying to just learn more about it. Now, when you were talking, Sam, about, you know, getting into, you know, computerized music and more of the generated sounds and the synth sounds and things like that, it's really cool stuff. I mean, I can listen to that too. And I think it's really good.
Yeah.
But I understand, like, when you were talking, Jenna, about hearing the bluegrass band for the first time, and there's nothing, I would imagine there was nothing electric, maybe except for microphones, and that's what that's what always gets me about it. And I've had bluegrass bands in the studio before in my other radio thing, and I'm always blown away by it. No matter where they are, they sound good. It can be in this little room. It can be in, you know, out in the middle of the woods. It's like, wow. I mean, and they don't need anything. And it's just, I think, yeah, that kind of, you kind of can fold that back and look at, you know, when I did my thing about the blues, and I was talking to some of the blues historians and people that said, well, you know, a lot of it was by necessity because that's all the instruments they had. They didn't have anything else. They had a cat gut and a cigar box. And so what do you guys think about, you know, you think about it, it's pretty incredible. Make music with what you have. I'll just say this real quick. I did a show a couple years back. And it's always, I always like to say this because it's good for people to go back and look at this. There's a couple of folks in England that went to a tribe in Cameroon in Africa, and they lived with them for 3 or 4 years. And this tribal people, and they didn't speak any words, and their communication was through music. And their communication of their history of their families and everything was by music. And they did some other kind of communication, but all their history, like our, you know, history books or anything that we would have, that was all in songs. And they went, it's the Baka tribe, and the band was called Baka Beyond, and it's really cool. And I just bring that up because we kind of talked about, Sam, you were talking about the computerized music and how that's kind of taken us in a different direction. But if you go back to that and how these people would use just bare instruments, and music became not just something like entertainment in our lives, but it was a necessity to keep history alive. What do you think about that part and how that, I mean, we're in a kind of a modern society, but how important music can be in our lives, and how it's so important to teach music to kids. And I don't know if any of this makes any sense, but it kind of does to me.
Oh, it totally does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely think, you know, music is one of the most accessible forms of art because, you know, books require a lot of commitment and movies are very difficult to make. And I mean, no, it's not to say that music isn't hard to make, but it's very accessible. Like a single person or a small group of people can come together and make a song. And you know, it really, it's important because it does reflect a lot of our culture and what's going on in the world. And I think, the documentary, the Straight Outta Compton that just came out, really is kind of poignant because it talks about the F the Police song, and you know how that was, you know, really important to capture what was going on,
right?
In that part of the world in that era.
That's a great point.
Music is real important for that.
I agree with you on that part, because people weren't listening, and then when you know NWA and they came out with these songs and people started listening to it, and then the different neighborhoods started listening to it, and it like kind of opened up what was really going on. That's a great point make because of what music can do. Now, one thing I think is really cool about it too is the fact that, you know, I've been doing this radio show for about 8 years, but I've never ever felt like I could critique any music. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but to me it's like you were talking, Sam, about it being art and how that, you know, art is something that comes from, you know, a creation. And when I hear people sing or play, I can hear that's what it is, you know. I don't compare it to anything else. And I think, you know, if somebody will say, well, it doesn't sound like this or it doesn't sound like that or this note was a little off and that was a little this and that, I really don't see it that way. Do you think that makes sense? Because to me, it's like that's what it is. It's art. I've heard bands before that I actually had no idea what was going on, but I didn't. Seriously, I sat there and listened to this one band, and I thought, okay, now they're not in any kind of tune, and they're not in any rhythm. But you know, somebody told me after the show, that just throw all that out and listen to what they are. And I thought, okay, What do you think of that? Because sometimes we try so hard to put music in a box and make it sound like a certain way, and it's all shiny and pretty and has all these bows on it and everything. But some of the best music that I can remember is pretty raw stuff. And Sam, you were talking about punk music. I mean, that's what kind of got that going too, because you talked about NWA and how they kind of broke through the social thing with their songs that maybe people wouldn't have heard if it wouldn't have been through music. Well, punk did that, you know, with the same kind of deal. What do you guys think of that? We'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that you can't really, you know, qualify music as good or bad art-wise. I think that you can, on whether it's successful in communicating what the artist sort of intended to be.
Okay.
Which, you know, it's not a matter of goodness or qualityness, because it might be successful to the artist, but not as the fans or the listeners may not receive it the way that it's intended. And so, you know, that's a tricky thing in music, is that people just may not click with what you're making.
I think that's a really good point, Sam, about it's about intention, because I was actually, I discovered what I guess is called sound art a few years ago. A friend of mine was playing something on his computer, and I said, "What in the world are you listening to? It sounded like someone like knocking a hammer on a wall, and then it sounded like someone, you know, putting their finger around a glass, and then just it sounded like a bunch of noise, just in general." And I said, "This is not music." And he said, "But it is. You know, this is music to me, and it's all subjective, and I like this." And so that's when I kind of realized that music can really be anything you want it to be, and what one person likes, someone else might not. But I think it's all about the intention behind what you're making.
Yeah, that makes sense, Jenna. I interviewed a band. They were a noise band, and it was basically they would record sounds. And it was different. I have to say that. And I looked at it like kind of what you're saying. I didn't really get it, because it didn't have, you know, your traditional rhythm and all that stuff to it. But but it was definitely, you know, hard for them to do. I mean, it wasn't an easy thing. It's just like they didn't just start recording sounds. It all meant something. So I think that's pretty awesome, too. I'm glad you said that, because I'm going to go back and see if I can dig that up and maybe see how they're doing today. But this
That'd
is good
great.
Talk.
You know,
yeah, go
I
ahead.
I was going to say, that was a game changer for me when I was when I discovered that, because I'd never even heard of anyone doing anything like that. I'd never heard of sound art or what did you call it? Is there a name for it?
Oh, there is a name for it.
Sound art.
Well, the band that I had on, I have to go back and look at it. Yeah, because it was some kind of something noise, and it was I'll go back and find out. I have to go back in my
archive. It really did make me look at music in a whole new light, that it doesn't have to fit in the standard mold in any way, shape, or form, that it can be anything you want it to be, and that's really neat.
Yeah. Well, my guests are Jenna Blake and Sam Sobelman from the band Valley Shine. Their latest single, their new single is Sugar Dreams, which we started the show off with. And you can learn about them and go on their website, which is valleyshineband.com. And Sugar Dreams is available on iTunes and Amazon. And guys, let's talk a little bit about Sugar Dreams and the song that we heard at the beginning of the show. How it was written, and just kind of tell us the backstory.
Yeah. Well, it sort of started, you know, as a lot of songs do, with some heartbreak. there was a gal who left me for another man, cared about her, and was happy that she had found someone who made her happy, but also really sad. And so I wanted to get a song that would capture that. So I wrote part of it, and then brought it in to Jenna, and we sort of hammered it out you know, really in honestly one writing session. It was one of the easiest songs that we've ever written. It was
just
sort of
it's never
done.
Usually that easy.
it was really, you know, when you know you have a song that works, you just kind of know. And that was cool.
When you brought it in and once we got the chorus down, we knew it and we high-fived, and it was a great feeling when you know you just reached that point that you've been trying to get to. Yeah. I love that feeling as a songwriter when you're like, done. Deal.
On to the next one.
That's awesome. Sam, has it always been easy for you to write songs about personal things? Because sometimes, you know, when I talk to songwriters, it is, and sometimes it isn't.
I have a very difficult time writing songs that are not personal. I try, but those songs generally end up feeling a little more contrived to me. And when I write songs that are about more personal experiences, they feel more natural and get to a state where I'm happy with them a lot faster. I think that's about...
I agree with that, actually, Sam. I think I'm the same way. It's a lot easier... to pull from personal experiences, even if you start it with, sometimes I'll start it with a personal experience and then translate that idea into what if someone else was having this experience, and maybe, you know, it's a little bit different than my experience, but at least I'm starting the idea from somewhere personal. That's just a little bit easier for me personally.
Yeah, I think that separates, to me, guys, a lot of the songs that I hear, if it's something that I can feel is from the heart of the songwriter, and you can connect with that.
Sure.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's like when you're reading a book or a story, and if you connect with the characters, you're in. You know, you're all in. And I think that's the same way with music and with songs. Now, let's start off with Jenna. When was it that you knew you could write songs? And how is the process of songwriting for you, Jenna?
It took me years to be able to write songs. I remember for a long time I just would play covers of songs because I wanted to kind of analyze what they were doing. Why were they changing the chord progression here? And what, you know, this bridge is really interesting. Why is that? And just really analyzing all the bits and pieces of the song, from the lyrics to the melody and chord progression. And then I would try to do it on my own, and it would just be a disaster. But, you know, it's powering through the first battle of writer's block and doubting yourself and not really knowing what you're doing. If you can fight through that. I remember the first song I wrote that I knew was like, I just did this, and that was successful. And that was actually the song Bop Bop, which we have on our SoundCloud as well, and on iTunes and all that. That was my first, I think, successful song that I finished and thought, wow, I guess I can do this. And it was that one time that then just set me off on a path of writing constantly and feeling the confidence I needed to continue writing. But like I said, it was a long, hard road of analyzing music and trying things and failing left and right to finally get to a place where I felt comfortable and confident in my own talents as a writer.
Now, Jenna, do you have to, like, you're talking about writing the songs, and do you have to, like, convince yourself that that's a good song, or do you depend on other people like Sam or other folks, you know, when you're bouncing things off of them, for them to say, yeah, that's good, or, you know, maybe that needs a little help? Because that's kind of a difficult thing sometimes, too, to you know, you're writing
sure.
a song and to get somebody else's opinion on it.
Sure, because it's subjective. Again, art can be tricky that way, because one person might think this is the best song ever, and the other person could say, yeah, it's not good. I don't like that at all. So it becomes a balance when you're writing with someone to be like, well, that's just your opinion, and I disagree. And then you know, some people say, well, I disagree, and then we could sit there and twiddle our thumbs, but we've gotten to a place now where I think at the beginning, going back to your question, early on we were writing, I think it was really important for me to have a good writing partner because I needed that confidence. I knew deep down that I'd have a good idea, but I just needed that person to say, I agree with you, you know, to just make me think, okay, I'm right. I know that I'm onto something here. And but as time has gone by and Sam and I have written together, I think it becomes more and more clear without needing someone to say it when you're onto something. And I think Sam probably, I feel like you might feel the same way about that now too. I can sense that in our last writing session, which is
years
ago. It feels like I'm get that vibe from you too.
I mean, that's definitely true. Like, you know, as we've gotten better at writing together, you know, it's easier to make compromises with each other because we, you know, we do like certain different things, and it's getting easier to communicate what we like and dislike about different things that we bring in. And that's, you know, it's of learning our own language to write and be more successful that way. And, you know, there's still conflicts, but, you know, we...
So, of course, and there's going to be, because like I was saying, you know, everyone will have their own opinion about a song, and sometimes that just won't ever match up, but... Like,
man, Jenna just won't let me put a rap breakdown in any of our songs yet.
Keep working on it.
Not quite there yet. Yeah, compromise is so important when it comes to songwriting, but I feel like Sam and I write really well together, and so we have that going for us, and going strong.
How did you guys meet, and how did you get together as musicians and sharing your love for music and coming together as one? Because that's pretty hard to do.
It really is, and that's... Sam, do you mind if I start at least the story?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so I had been playing in all these different bands in L.A. for years. They just weren't really the right fit for me. I was in these moody psych rock bands and then just all kinds of different styles that just didn't really fit my personality and music taste and the roots rock and all that. And so I finally left the band I was in and I said, I am going to embark on finding the perfect writing partner for me, and I wanted to write songs and, you know, see where it goes. And that process was well over a year of me reaching out to all my musician friends in the network, writing with tons of people, and it just failing left and right for whatever reason. People's schedules, just not jiving musically, not someone maybe didn't have the same talent level, whatever it might be. Things just didn't work out, and I began to get really down about it, and I thought, maybe this just isn't something I should be doing. But then I thought, no, this is absolutely what I want to be doing, and I just need to get through this hurdle. But I thought, I just need to take a break from, you know, searching for this perfect writing partner. And I will never forget the day I was scrolling through Instagram, and somehow I ended up under cat photos. Because you know how it is. When you're on YouTube or Instagram, you can get lost for hours in a half hour or something.
And cats always jump out somewhere. Yeah, from somewhere.
Yeah, cats of all things. I'm like looking. And I see the picture of this beautiful cat and somehow managed to link over to the page of the person who posted the cat photo. And I saw a picture of this bearded guy with a banjo, and it says, I'm a banjo plucking, coffee sucking, mother calling dude. And I thought, I need to know this guy right now.
I
see some photos that he played music and that he was probably based somewhere in Southern California. So I messaged him and basically thought, this guy's going to think I'm crazy. But I said, hey, you know, I'm a songwriter. I see that you play music, banjo, and a lot of instruments that I love, and you know, would you be interested in maybe like meeting up to write? And I thought for sure he'd say, you kooky lady, you know, no, leave me alone. But he was totally down. And we ended up meeting up, and it was very apparent from our first session that we just musically jived, and it was what I had been looking for so long and hoping to find. So actually, Sam, I would love to know. I don't think I've ever heard your perspective from the other side when you got that message from me, what you thought about that.
I mean, yeah, it was I thought it was cool. You seem like a cool lady. You know, I'm no stranger to meeting ladies from the internet. Let's just leave it at that. But, yeah, I mean, you had a bunch of really cool photos of your own, like, graphic art, which I liked, and you had a photo of, I think you were playing on some like, was it Gershwin's piano? Or,
I played on, what's his name? I played on Frank Sinatra's piano, yeah.
Sinatra's piano. Yeah. And that's like, man, this lady seems cool. I think I should take a chance. I was playing in another project that had sort of, I'd started with an ex-girlfriend, but then that ended, and I sort of found a replacement singer in the meantime, but it was sort of just like a floundering thing, so I was really looking for something to spark my creativity, and that was Jenna.
So cool.
Yeah,
what was it? I mean, was it like when you guys were playing, and how did that work out? Did you just sit down with guitars and banjo and just sit down in a room? Did you start talking? How did that whole first session go? That's interesting.
That's actually a good question. Sam, do you remember? I remember when he first pulled up, and I thought, this is so weird. I don't know this guy from Adam, and here he is with banjo, and... like, you know, I do remember that moment of like, what am I doing?
Because it was at your place, and we were just like holed up in your room, and I think we like each brought a song.
Oh yeah, we did. I think I played him that Ba-Ba song, and then he played me one of his, and they went together really well. And also, I think there's some whiskey being drank, so that helped, I think, calm our nerves from our first writing session. Always got to have some whiskey.
Oh, that's wild. So from
I think we played each other songs. And from there, I think, well, because, like I said, for so long, I had been in search of a writing partner, and I went through dozens of people that just didn't work out. So I knew exactly what I was looking for in terms of chemistry, musical chemistry, and just how we got along. Was the person cool, weird? Was their schedule right? I mean, there's so many elements that go into finding someone that you can work with seriously and make music that you both agree on and like. And I felt like after that session that it was definitely worth at least meeting up again. And it was been one of the better sessions I'd ever had with someone. So we agreed to meet up again, and I think the second one was even better. And that's when, at least I knew for sure, this was definitely something to explore and continue.
Totally. Same.
So,
So
let's look at it right now. I mean, okay, so what do you guys have going on? I know that, you have, I believe you're working on some songs in the studio. Talk about some of the projects that are going on now and some of the things that you have, you know, happening, or that people can maybe that are listening to the show, and you know, if you got gigs or anything going on, because sometimes I forget to say that, and I should always remember to say that. Current things.
Plug our stuff.
Yeah.
Plug it.
We've got a bunch of cool stuff. We actually finished our record. We're just working out, you know, the kinks of releasing it. And Sugar Dream is the first track from this EP that we're going to put out. I think that the plan is October sometime to get the rest of the songs out into the world, which is going to be really great. I'm so excited.
Yeah, we just finished, we just had begun starting working on our first music video for Sugar Dream this past week. So we're planning on releasing that sometime next month. And then the record, I think we're shooting for sometime in late October. And we also do have a show coming up next week at El Cid, the 26th. Is it 26th? Wednesday?
Wednesday the 26th. Los Angelinos, come on out and say hi.
So talk a little bit, you were saying, guys, about the music video, and I'm always interested in that because, you know, you've got the song, and it's going to be the song Sugar Dreams, is that correct, the video?
Yeah, that's correct.
How did you come up with that? I mean, okay, so now you got a song, now you got to make it visual. How did that whole process work?
Of the video or the song?
Well, how you take a song and make it
video?
How you take the song and make it into a video. I'm always interested in that. That's pretty cool. Because that's a whole different medium of, you know what I mean? People can listen to the song, they kind of get their ideas, but then you take it and put it into a visual media, and I always wonder how that works, how you guys come up with the ideas and that.
Well, I think, the cover art for Sugar Dream is us lying in a pile of candy. And so I think it might have actually been our producer who sort of sparked the idea of doing something stop motion with candy. Because the plan for the video is to do a combination of stop motion and live action stuff. And so, you know, we sort of had that little germ of an idea, and he did a bunch of tests for us and created little vignettes of candies dancing and doing cute candy stuff. And Jenna came up with a great treatment for the video. I mean, Jenna, you've got visual skills, visual arts skills.
Yeah, I work in graphic design, so I had all kinds of ideas brewing, and I spent the whole day just coming up with the treatment. And, you know, I don't know much about video, but I had a vision, and I thought, how can we make this come to life? And we're still in the process of putting it all together, but we just did all of our live-action shots this past week, and I have a feeling that we're going to be able to blend them to make something really silly and fun that just really evokes the feel, the playful feel of the song.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. We got about 12 or 13 minutes left. I'd like to know about the studio work. How did that work out, guys? How did you come together I just want to know, did you get a producer? How did you do that whole taking your music and packaging it and working it through the studio, and how was this the experience?
Yeah, well, we actually, you know, we spent a good amount of time looking at different producers to work with because we wanted our songs to sound the way that we, you know, hear them in our heads, you know, and thought that having a third, you know, pillar really in the creative process would help us get through any roadblocks, you know. If we ever had any arguments, it could sort of be the swaying vote and really just bring in a whole fresh batch of ideas, too, that would take us to maybe places we didn't even think about. And so we looked at a couple different producers until we found the guy that we worked with who ended up being hands down the best choice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we knew. His name's Max Allen, and we met up with him, and, you know, we had met up with several other producers and weren't really sure yet, and I wasn't really expecting too much when we went out to meet with him, but when we heard some of the tracks that he played us that weren't available online or anything, you know, it was stuff we hadn't heard before, I remember thinking, man, this is kind of the exact vision that we hear for these songs, and I think that this guy is the real deal for us. So it was kind of after the meeting, I think we knew we found the right guy, which was a great feeling because it's really stressful looking for the right producer for a project because that's so important. I mean, the record could sound if we had gone with someone else, but Max really listened to what we wanted, and he was that mediator at times that Sam and I would disagree because that happens with art. If there's two people making art together, there's bound to be times where you disagree, and Max would seamlessly put it all together where we were both happy with the final product.
So was it easy for you guys to accept Max's ideas? Because it is your music, and you've got, you know, your ideas and your vision. Your name's going to be on the product, and you get this other person to come in, and I totally understand that. But sometimes, you know, when I've interviewed musicians, they think that's really cool and everything, but I still want it to sound this way or that way. Did you have any of that, or were you guys were on the same page? It sounds like you were.
Yeah, I don't think we had to deal with that as much, luckily, with Max, because he just kind of happened to be on the same page, which is kind of what I think we were feeling with our first meeting with him, that he got it. He got our vision, and he had already done stuff that had similar vibes as our songs, the way we wanted them to sound. So we thought we'd all be on the same page. And throughout the process, pretty much always, we were all in agreement about things. So that made it a lot easier.
Totally. Yeah.
Now, one last thing, I like to just kind of kick around a little bit. With the music industry the way it is today, how do you guys look at, you know, the marketing part of it, and how do you, like, Valley Shine, what are you going to do to separate yourselves from the pack and so people can hear it and listen to it? Because there's so much music out there, and you guys are, gosh, you know, being in Los Angeles, a lot of musicians, a lot of things out there. What do you guys think? How are you going to make your music break from the pack?
That's a good question.
$1 million question, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that makes us stand apart is that we have songs that are really fun to listen to live. And everybody who plays in the band is really, really talented and brings a lot of energy to the songs. And, you know, it's really that whole chemistry of all of us together that's going to sort of make people want to come out again and again to see us. And, you know, hopefully get us started to doing this full time.
What is it?
Yeah,
that...
I think it's tough because you want to write songs that you know people are really going to respond to. But as a songwriter, I think at the end of the day, one thing I've realized is that you have to just write the music that you believe in. And I think when someone truly believes in themselves, other people will believe in them and what they're doing. And that's been one of the biggest lessons I've learned in this process, that I can't sit while writing a song and think, oh, well, I don't know, are people going to like this? I have to think, do I like this? And am I proud of this? And if I am, then that's really all that matters. And I think that will come through in our song.
Yeah, I agree with that. I listen to a lot of music, and sometimes I have a hard time figuring out why some music I like and some I don't. But it's always that song I want to hear the second time, you know? It's like, okay, I want to hear that again. And that's what I think is so important. It's like stands out from the other songs. And like you're saying, Sam, sometimes, you know, there can be some real heavy stuff going on. But if you write songs that are, and Jenny, you said the same thing, that are, you know, kind of uplifting a little bit and happy and make people think about, you know, maybe what the really bright side of what music can do to a person's life, I think that's great. I think that's needed a lot in today's music and in today's world. So I'd just like to say thanks, guys, so much for being on the show. I've had a great time talking to you.
Yeah, this has been really fun.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Is there anything that I've missed that you would like to talk about? Maybe some things that you know, sometimes you go into an interview and you think, well, I'd like to say this, and then, you know, John doesn't say it, so... Is there anything you guys would like to touch on? Maybe I didn't.
Maybe just remind people that they want to, you know, stay up to date on our shows and you know, upcoming releases and things. They can follow us on social media. We're everywhere.
Yeah, we're on Instagram and Facebook, and we update it all the time with things that are going on. We have behind-the-scenes videos from our, you know, video that we were just discussing. We'll be posting more funny behind-the-scenes clips and letting people know when we have shows and things coming up. So definitely social media. If you're interested in anything we've been talking about, then follow us because we'll entertain you.
Well, thank you so much. And, guys, I just I wish the best for you, and we'll have to definitely keep in touch.
Absolutely.
Great. Sounds wonderful.
Well, thank you, and thanks for everyone that listened to John Talk Radio tonight. And it's all about the independent musicians and getting the music out and support independent musicians, and that's why we do what we do. Thanks, guys, so much, and we'll keep in touch. And thanks, everyone, and everybody have a great evening.
Bye.
On the big screen, you just go perfect.